This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Quit laughing.
I'm trying.
Welcome to Gola. I'm Katie Parla, a Rome-based food and beverage writer, culinary guide, and cookbook author.
And I'm Danielle Caligari, an assistant professor in Italian at Dartmouth College and a certified specialist of wine.
Hi.
Hi, Katie. I'm so excited because we're having what we call podcast boot camp when we get together and record a bunch of episodes. And we're sort of in the same place.
We are in Venice, but we are probably 20 meters apart. I am on the outdoor deck, and you are inside your beautiful Airbnb.
Yes, we're not, however, in the Venice that people would probably expect us to be in.
Right, we're in Venezia, California.
One of my absolute favorite Venices, nonetheless. And I couldn't be happier to be able to hear the echo of your voice just we're well over the required 6 feet, that's for sure, in any case.
Oh, absolutely.
And our technology situation remains precarious, but we're getting there and we're making it happen because we're just so excited to keep pumping out episodes for our wonderful fans.
Yeah, I'd like to do a little back padding for ourselves. We had these big plans to like record 100,000 episodes a year and drop them like consistently. And that is an implausible goal that only two type A's plus like ourselves could do. Like, I'm the queen of overpromising. I try to make good on everything. And it's been really nice the past few months that we've actually been committed to a schedule. So thanks for all the Golozi who have been listening and have reached out expressing their joy at having fresh apps in their pod box. I don't know if that's a thing, if pod box is a phrase that people use, but you get it's not, what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I totally agree. And I will say that we're doing pretty well, all things considered. This has been a year of curveballs, and we took some time off to reset and reboot. But while we didn't get to do particularly some of the traveling that we had hoped to do together, we still kind of made it happen. And now we did at least get this one full day together, plus some events coming up that all of our fans will have already seen by the time they hear this. And hopefully others will come back to and find on our now also wonderfully newly updated website. So don't forget that you can not only listen to back episodes, but find out what we've been up to by going to golapodcast.com in addition to our usual splashy social media feeds. But Katie, besides all the logistics here, we were also excited because there was a topic that you've just been absolutely dying to cover that was at the very top of our list for whenever we finally had full day to get really into recording and get into our deep Gola headspace.
That's right. I'm passionate about this topic. Fettuccine Alfredo. Or as I called it for the first 22 years of my life, Fettuccine Alfredo.
Yeah, it'll be familiar to most people in either case.
It will be familiar to most Americans. It will be familiar to Romans as a punchline in a joke that they make about Americans.
Right, exactly, yes. So what made you so excited about Fettuccine Alfredo or Fettuccine Alfredo, particularly lately or in any case?
Well, that's a great question. I don't think about Fettuccine Alfredo that much anymore. I do think about its components individually, fettuccine, butter, Parmigiano Reggiano more specifically. And by the way, those are the OG original quote in quotes original ingredients. I grew up eating it with like whipped cream folded in. And also carrot sticks, which I'm not sure if that's a variation that was like unique or if it's a thing that other people have experienced. Either way, I was tagged recently on social media. Whenever someone wants to start a fight with someone else on the internet, they tap me in. And the conversation was about fettuccine Alfredo. It had been declared a thoroughly Roman dish. And the person who tagged me like said, this is bullshit. Like, it's not really a thing in Rome. What do you think? And I just simply shared my two cents very briefly. Fettuccine Alfredo is both thoroughly Roman in the sense that it is really married to two specific restaurants or trattoria in Rome. And it is completely un-Roman in the sense that it doesn't fall into the sort of constellation of Roman dishes. It's not part of the Roman canon. It's not part of the cucina romana. It really is its own thing. And in that way, it's not really a thing.
Yeah, I think that's actually an excellent description of something that's weirdly hard to describe, because what as we were talking about before, as we were thinking about this topic together, you pointed out that what makes fettuccine Alfredo interesting to us in a kind of broader sense is that it belongs to this group of dishes that represents a space that is supposedly deeply historical and that people have a lot of possessiveness over, but that actually doesn't reach that far back. And even with just a little bit of kind of troubling that idea, you immediately realize that this cannot align with any of the things that we talk about as sort of essential to Italian cuisine in, you know, the abstract, like simplicity of ingredients, local products, insistence on kind of regional identity, etc. Fettuccine Alfredo is none of those things, but it is inherently Roman in this way. So what makes it Roman, as you say and don't say at the same time, Katie?
What makes it Roman is the consistent assertion of its birth in Rome, mythology attached to it, and its continued production at two places, both of which are called Alfredo. Although,
wait, what?
I know, right? It's crazy. Oh my goodness. Oops. One is called Alfredo alla Scrofa and is located on Via della Scrofa in central Rome, not far from the Parliament. And the other place is called Il Vero Alfredo, the real Alfredo. Not
That's
that
how you fake know.
Ass place over on Via della Scrofa. But they are actually two related places in the sense that Alfredo alla Scrofa was founded by a guy called Alfredo Di Lelio. He sold it to two waiters in the mid-20th century, or rather his son did. And then the family opened another place down the street, essentially. Like, you can walk between these two Alfredos in about 10 minutes. But the name Alfredo remains. And if anyone's been to Rome or Italy in general, like, you know, you can walk across town and encounter a lot of places with similar names, but they're not even related. They just happen to have names that sound incredibly similar.
And there are only like 30 total names used in Italy.
So that's right. It's only a matter of time. Limited palette. So we're not looking at historical documents here when we read the like about fettuccine Alfredo on either of the websites. And they apparently did not compare notes because there are definitely discrepancies with the history and even the creation date. So according to, I'm going to just sort of like summarize what the two sites generally say. In 1907 or 1908, Alfredo wanted to give this really hearty, calorie-rich plate to his wife who had just given birth and was feeling very ill. So he made her a plate of fettuccine with butter and Parmesan and said, I hope this makes you feel better. If it doesn't, I'll eat it. Now, I believe that is something that a turn of the 20th century man would have told his wife. I am, however, skeptical that in 1907 or 1908, this thing is invented, and then it like takes off and becomes like a hugely famous thing that draws celebrities from all over the world to eat it. That sounds implausible to me, but it's a great story and one that is stated as if it were fact on both websites. So then the story goes, like, Alfredo was working in a bunch of places. He opens his own place in 1914 in the location of Alfredo alla Scrofa. The fettuccine Alfredo thing takes off. It's a tableside mantecatura. So the sort of emulsifying of the butter and cheese into the silky sauce tossed with handmade fettuccine and served. And there's like this pageantry and like theatrical element to the tableside mixing and serving. And then the most of the story or history around fettuccine Alfredo on both websites is based on the celebrities who ate it. Nearly zero Italians in the mix, but like Jimi Hendrix ate the fettuccine Alfredo and Rita Hayworth ate the fettuccine Alfredo. Ringo Starr ate the fettuccine Alfredo. And it is posited as something that was so amazing, so important to Rome, that it really only appealed to American and British tourists. So any claim that it is thoroughly Roman, I think, deserves a deeper investigation, because it is, in fact, something that was invented in Rome. I have never seen it outside of those two establishments in the center of town that claim to be the real Alfredo. But that's what I kind of love about it. Like, it starts so many arguments when you bring up fettuccine Alfredo with an American who has been to one of these places. They will regurgitate line by line the like about page from both spots. It's like you walk in there, you get indoctrinated, and then you just decide, like, whatever these people are telling me about their famous dish that they're currently marketing to me must be true. And we know, as people have spent most of our adult lives in Italy, that there's something beautiful about that, but it pays to be very, very skeptical.
Yeah, well, and it's because it's funny as you're saying it. I'm of course, as usual, kind of thinking about the sides of this that I want to tear into, and I think the first thing that jumps out at me is the really, really interesting tension that is brought up by the idea that that Italian culinary culture is so kind of paramount and exceptional that it carries with it this weight that cannot be tested, right? So as an American coming from this inferior culinary culture, you go to a restaurant in Rome and the Roman chef and or maitre d' front of house there tells you this is an important dish and it's famous and this is why, and you accept it unhesitatingly because you understand it as coming from this culinary culture that has this kind of powerful capital and that cannot be doubted or troubled in any way. Of course, the other side of that is that where is that coming from? Because as you pointed out, Katie, this dish, even if we allow it to have the almost certainly false history that is posted on the websites that you're talking about and elsewhere, even if we allow it to have that history, that's still only around 100 years old. And by Italian standards, that doesn't count for very much. Things that are a century old are young in Italy. So they're still already kind of revealing the sandy foundation that they're standing on often when it comes to this sort of completely impenetrably important culinary culture that if something was done one way, cannot be done another way, et cetera, et cetera. And it makes me particularly, as you're talking about also people getting into fights about it, it makes me particularly interested in trying to find out how we kind of create those foundations. You know, how is it that we believe so unhesitatingly in the fact that if an Italian makes food rules or if an Italian creates a dish and says it comes from X, that that's the way it must be. Even Italians themselves believe that against evidence that they know better, right? As you are pointing out, making fettuccine Alfredo a punchline, but then also exploiting it at the same time.
Absolutely. You know, I watched I'm not proud of my Italian television viewing skills, but I was watching La Clerici, right? Yes. Very famous lady, lots of blonde hair. She's always hosting like people who are cooking, and she actually hosted the current chef of one of the Alfredos. And she's just like, what is fettuccine Alfredo? Like, because Americans know what it is. Italians, Romans do not know what it is. And the guy's like, you're right. It's something that's like very specific to a place, and Americans love it. I think probably the regulars that go to Alfredo enjoy it as well. Although, because it is the most expensive pasta on both menus, I would assume that it is not the number one choice of locals. But we have to acknowledge that the original Alfredo was an innovator in a considerable way. He made something that people ate at home and would never be served in a restaurant, a marketable food.
Yes. And this is exactly the kind of incredible part about this dish. So let's first establish what it is if you go and eat it in Rome, and then talk about the kind of fame that led it to have further iterations elsewhere, and then consider what that means in terms of how we look at foods like this in Italy. You said something about carrots earlier that nearly knocked me off my chair. But before we get there, let's start with it is utterly shocking, jaw-dropping. But while I process that momentarily, first tell us, what's the standard recipe at said two Alfredo's restaurants, if they are the same?
So they are related, but they're not the same. They don't share ownership. Mm-hmm. They don't even really share a sensibility. At Alfredo alla Scrofa, which was the location of Alfredo, like the inventor's restaurant, right? And I mentioned this earlier, but I'll just repeat. He sold it to two waiters, or his offspring sold it to two waiters, and then opened his own Alfredo, a competing Alfredo down the street. So at Alfredo alla Scrofa today, your 20 euro fettuccine Alfredo is served with 24-month aged Parmigiano Reggiano and burro delle Langhe, butter from Piedmont. That's what you get. The vero Alfredo in Piazza Augusto Imperatore, they say only the best ingredients for our dishes, but they are not specific about the sourcing of ingredients. They simply call their dish house specialty, the real majestical, very majestical. Is that the translation of maestosissima?
It was funny because that's what that comes up a lot. Yeah. I mean, so the most majestic is how I would properly grammatically translate that.
The real most majestic fettuccine al Alfredo. So they even call it differently because at Alla Scrofa, it's fettuccine Alfredo. And at the real place, it's fettuccine al Alfredo. So fettuccine in the style of Alfredo. And then they don't mention the ingredients at all, which is different than all of the other dishes on the menu. But, you know, of course, this is going to be a tableside tossing. They're going to come over. You're going to see the butter. You're going to see the Parmesan. We don't know the age of the Parmesan. We don't know the provenance of the butter. I have not been to the real most majestical fettuccine place, so I can't say if they are curating the whole ingredient sourcing as they mix, but they're not specific about it on the site. So notice that in both of these cases, there's an absence of cream, carrots, of course. I mean, come on. Chicken.
No one was looking for them. Yeah.
Shrimp, herbs, spices. What else people put in it? Broccoli?
I kind of forgot that you're right. And as you're saying it, I realize that this is something that does sort of, it becomes like as though it's a blank canvas that you could throw anything at, because it's just this creamy white sauce, which to be fair, that makes sense in some ways, but it does, I think, kind of bring us to the question of, how Italian is this? And as your list of ingredients at the Alfredo who does establish the specific items used will reveal to us, it is not local. So using cheese and butter from other places, which first of all, one thing to say, not regional, but the other thing that that you said earlier, Katie, that I really want to emphasize is that this is something that in Italy, it's not that people wouldn't eat it. It's that you would never go out to a restaurant and pay to eat that. It's something that you would make at home because it's a perfect example of this just like barely elevated cucina povera, which is not, you know, properly cucina povera. If you have butter and cheese, you're not in terrible shape. But the total absence of proteins, of fresh produce, of the other things that you would normally make the centerpiece of your table reveals to us that it is an ultra simple dish to be whipped up at a whim late at night or in lieu of a better meal because you weren't able to come up with it for limits of time or expense.
Or, in a sense, if your tummy hurts and you want something that doesn't have like tomato or anything like too heavy or acidic or tough to digest, it feels to me like riso and bianco in that kind of genre. But I'm not sure if it falls under that category.
I definitely think it would. This is one of those, it's a gray area, but it is one of the kinds of foods that Italians would consider good for an unsettled stomach and Americans would think of as like so rich and totally inappropriate for if you're feeling sick.
Yeah. I mean, my memories of eating fettuccine Alfredo are making myself sick by eating so much of it. So there's the irony there. So fettuccine Alfredo was my favorite dish. Like, this is what my mom would make me for my birthday. I was way into it. But yeah, like the denser, heavier version that, you know, eventually congeals because there's so much butter fat and milk fat from the cream. Mm-hmm. I'm starving. But but burro e parmigiano, like as a pairing, is something that has historical roots in the cuisine of northern and central northern Italy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. In all of the places that we've talked about for things like finer cheeses and the kind of more developed culture around butter, especially, that's all coming to, you know, down from kind of an Alpine tradition and into the Padania. Romans would not really put butter in much of anything most of the time, as long as they had good olive oil on them. So, and forget about the heavy cream element, which is something that I feel like you see panna being introduced in like college age recipes that Italian cooking websites suggest. Like, you're too dumb to understand how to develop flavors without just throwing a bunch of fat at this dish. So add some cream at the end and it won't suck as much as it probably does.
I will say one of the most jarring food experiences that I had when I moved to Italy was the fact that the cream was like triply thick and came in little milk cartons, not milk cartons mm-hmm. like we have here, but in like juice box size. And my college age roommates who were terrible cooks, awful cooks, would use it in just about everything. They would dice up that's not true. They didn't dice anything. They bought the pre-chopped ham cubes.
Right.
They got the frozen peas. Right. They threw it in and they made, you know, it tasted good because it was like fatty and like whatever. After a few bottles of wine, it's like delicious. But it was objectively like some of the worst quality stuff I'd ever encountered from a food perspective. And they did not appreciate that judgment from my part.
But the beginning of a long
but
life.
Yeah, panna as like something you just like toss into a dish. That's really common in like the home cooking of like the 70s and 80s, 90s. You really see it heavily present in cooking magazines, which are not the sort of high quality paper that you encounter with things like Saveur or even Bon App, but like almost newsprint quality. They're just like churning out these cooking magazines at supermarkets that are made with industrial products that have lots of like product placement featured. And so adding cream is a way to make something like elegant and fun and like interesting. So it's really like heavily drilled into. But the cream in the Fettuccine Alfredo's American or North American incarnation, at least in my experience, is whipped. My mom used to always whip it up, fold in the butter and cheese, carrots, black pepper.
Yeah, definitely.
But do we have like a first butter and Parmigiano pasta historical reference?
Well, you know, the funny thing is that, Katie, exactly the combination with the kind of earliest forms of pastas is all over the place. And it's not uncommon. So, you know, speaking of how historically accurate or how relevant something is to a culinary canon, when it comes to pasta in Italy, butter and cheese layered with pasta, usually the very, very earliest forms are in sheets, right? Lasagna, which is the first things that we see. So you have, you know, sheets of pasta rolled out, folded with either butter and cheese or ancestors of, and eventually a very close to the bechamel that we know today to be used, akin to the same idea, although working with butter and flour. The idea is very old, deeply rooted, and very much as Italian as anything else. And there were lots of early iterations that would have been considered quite elevated, very high class kinds of stuff because of that richness, because of the caloric content that it packed, because of how delicious it was, because it looked beautiful, because it was so kind of white and pure also. So we could certainly go back to the late Middle Ages for that and beyond. The kind of later proliferation and the kind of the challenge to what makes it authentic or not is probably, you know, mostly related to the point you were making earlier about it being specifically positioned from a marketing perspective as something to attract non-Italians to Italian cuisine. And that's pretty curious because it's not like Italian cuisine is hard to love. Most of it is, as we have repeatedly emphasized here, about very simple ingredients, dressed lightly, nearly untouched, presented more or less as they are. And the great success of Italian cuisine around the world reflects that in some ways. But in other ways, it has been sort of forcibly metamorphosed into something that Italians seem to think other people will like even before they know if other people want that in a way. Does that make sense? Does that resonate for you?
It does. I mean, it kind of reminds me of the myth of carbonara's creation, that it was composed of things that Americans would like, bacon and eggs.
Yeah, right, exactly. It's like the only people who could possibly eat this are disgusting Americans who are always eating bacon and eggs in the morning, and hence carbonara was born.
Yeah, and that's another fun myth. Like K rations featured powdered eggs and bacon. So I'm not sure how that would have worked, but it's a fun story.
It sure makes carrots in your Alfredo sound a lot more delicious.
Yeah. You know, it sounds weird and it tastes good when you're 10.
Listen, I'm older. First of all, your mother was doing her part to get some carrots into your belly while you were having pasta and butter so check.
No one has ever accused me of being a prolific vegetable eater.
Oh, it's funny. You know, this is, however, I think your greatest trick, because your social media presence and lifestyle would suggest that the only things you eat are bread in its many forms and then topped by mostly cheese and occasionally bacon and its friends. But in fact, I happen to know that you both are physically active all the time and do indeed enjoy a salad, even when it is not forced upon you.
I'm an omnivore. I'm a physically active. No, you know what? I'm a physically fit omnivore.
I would even go so far as to say that, absolutely.
I mean, don't race me.
Oh, I'm not gonna, because you would definitely beat me.
I'm a marathoner. I'm not a sprinter. So
I might be able to make it
100-yard dash or something, and you'll win.
All right. We'll do it on the Venice Boardwalk later this afternoon. But in the meantime, before we kind of conclude our discussion of Fettuccine Alfredo, I feel like we do have to talk about a little bit more about its movement across the Atlantic and its presence in the U.S., because you're talking about making it at home in a way that is, we could maybe say, inauthentic or you know, sort of just a vague shadow of what it originally was. But it is also in a loving way and with a kind of attachment to an Italian/Italian-American culture that was part of your family and your life growing up. But Fettuccine Alfredo has had a kind of success that goes way beyond that. I mean, it's not just something that Italian Americans eat for birthdays or holidays, for a special occasion, something like that. It's not a dish that you only find on an Italian restaurant or purportedly Italian restaurant menu. It is everywhere in some ways.
Yeah, it's not something that like the Olive Garden picked up on and you only find it in those sort of like red sauce joints or Italian chains. You find it on menus at bars, at like cafes. It's something that is like shockingly ubiquitous. And I mean, it kind of makes sense because it's a pasta with butter and cheese, which is the pasta that you can serve to little kids without, you know, having to make too many modifications. It sort of fills that void on a menu that has to cast a wide net and satisfy a lot of people. So you can get like ribs and fettuccine Alfredo and pizza and like a bunch of things that do have historical origins in a place but have really become American in a true sense.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And it's true. I mean, part of it is that it's a kid's meal dressed up for adults, right? It's like the idea, what do they call them? Boneless chicken wings, which is just chicken fingers, basically, right? Yeah. I think. Or nuggets.
Ugh, you're speaking my language. I like a nugget, I like a chicken finger. I mean, you know that I was a fat kid, right?
Okay, I think that, first of all, you were always a great lover of food.
Yes.
Which was my experience too. I mean, I got really excited. I thought about food all the time when I was young too. I mean, same as you're talking about like your birthday meals, I'm trying to think of those things. I remember my grandmother, you know, let us each pick what we wanted for our birthdays also. And I would come up with these elaborate, ridiculous things. Like I would totally make her go and buy all kinds of fresh seafood and a bunch of like, I mean, all like really labor intensive recipes also. I was such a pain in the ass, honestly. But when it comes to something like a nugget or chicken finger, I mean, that kids respond to that because they're packed with flavor, right? It's actually not, you know, I think people think of it as their palates are so underdeveloped, but it's more than just that. They're getting a lot of bang for their buck with food like that. And if you're a kid and you're running around all day and you come inside and you want to shove some food in your face, like that, it works. I think there's more criticism there than maybe is fair sometimes.
Yeah. And it's got that really salty, delicious component like children like it, dogs like it.
Yeah.
My friend just got a dog and his dog just encountered chicken McNuggets for the first time and lost his mind.
He hasn't
tried fettuccine Alfredo, but I don't think it would go over well. That's just a theory.
Without that delicious outside. I feel like you guys should make a TikTok with that dog eating chicken nuggets though. I'm into it. Well, Katie, before we leave our fans and move on to the next episode of Gola for them that we're churning out today, what are you going to recommend if people do want to try Alfredo or some kind of Alfredo adjacent thing when they're in Italy, what's the move according to you as the Romane?
Okay, the move is, unless you're at one of the two Alfredos, if you ask for anything Alfredo, you are going to red flag so fast and so hard. It is like, it is offensive. I know, like, this isn't me saying this, being a jerk. It is offensive to an Italian server to be asked for fettuccine Alfredo. And it, you know, it's due to this sort of like lack of flexibility, like not understanding how maybe knowing how famous it is, but not really respecting the dish because it is something that sort of encapsulates the way that Italians ridicule American or North American cuisine. So if you must try fettuccine Alfredo, I mean, honestly, I would go to Alla Scrofa because, you know, I'm bougie. I like that burro delle langhe. I'm trying to get my Piemontese burro on all the time and fancy parm. But I prefer the ambiance and like the location of Il Vero Alfredo, which is the one in Piazza Augusto Imperatore, this like incredible like early 1930s white limestone mess around the tomb of the Emperor Augustus. So I just like sort of a more, I find that location and the atmosphere and decor more interesting, but I would prefer the actual ingredients of Alla Scrofa. So go to those two places if you need fettuccine Alfredo, report back to us, order some other stuff too. Let us know how the carbonara and the amatriciana and the cacio e pepe are. The odds are most of the people who are locals are going to be eating those and not the Alfredo. But yeah, that's your homework. When travel opens up, you got to go try Alfredo. If you've got extra time, don't waste a meal on it, but
yeah, that's for like if you're in Rome 10 days, I say, right? I don't know. I have a totally skewed vision of how long people take for vacations. But
if you're there for a couple months, hit it up.
Yeah, there you go. Well, Katie, I'm actually so glad. We started this one. I was a little skeptical that fettuccine Alfredo could really carry us for a whole episode, but I didn't even have time to bring up some of the other thoughts that I had. So,
you want to do a rapid fire final thoughts?
Well, I mean, rapid fire final thoughts is you already said this in so many ways, but I just feel like I'll say it one more time. If you go somewhere in Italy and there's pasta for 20 euros on the menu, it should either have been lauded so thoroughly and internationally that you know everything about this place, or you should be very skeptical.
Or it should have truffles on it.
Yeah, exactly. So if you want to have the equivalent of $25 pasta with butter and cheese, go for it, but you know, go for it with Katie's caveats in mind. Are you there for the atmosphere? Are you there for the experience? Are you there for special ingredients that are relatively hard to source if you're not on the peninsula? Consider those things, and then also be sure to not go around to Italian restaurants at random all over from north to south, saying things like "I want ravioli" or "I want Alfredo sauce" on things. Their menu is constructed in a conscious way, and it's going to reflect what they have available and what they think is good. And so not just from a cultural sensitivity standpoint, but also from, and much more importantly, ultimately in this particular context, from a having a good time aspect, make sure to order what they do well, and don't subject yourself to bad Alfredo, whether you have us there or not.
True that. And remember, although this is changing, career waiters are not there to serve you. You're there to impress them.
This is very true. And I'm gonna put a pin in that because we're coming back to that topic in an upcoming episode that people are really gonna like, about how an Italian meal is structured and how it is served and received. So everyone should enjoy this long, long reflection on Fettuccine Alfredo with the promise of many more episodes coming up that you'll also hopefully equally enjoy. Apologies for the fact that our current studio is an Airbnb that has the sound of skateboarders on the Venice boardwalk around us and some local traffic. We are just out here doing this for you guys, and we appreciate that you're listening and supporting. And we can't wait until we can all be in Rome eating Alfredo and everything else together again.
Ciao.
Arrivederci.